This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Loyalists of the Place to Be Wrestling Network, winter has passed. And I am hot and excited. Welcome back, everyone, to your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's main e-fucking vent. I am your tri-host, Scott Criscolo, episode 162, and it is red hot. Winter melted. The electronics, the mystery, the weird glares, the funny promos, the not knowing what to do with his hands in between moves. It does not matter. The sun is shining in all elite wrestling. Ding dong. The witch is dead. Let me bring in my compadres, because they're just as excited as I am. This gentleman is on his second pod today, because he's got more work rate than the guy who's no longer champion, the Godfather, Nate Milton.
What's going on, Scotty? Yes, I know we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, a lot of big news in the business, some sad, some exciting, but you know what? I'm not here to talk about much of what's on the format tonight, Scotty. We could throw the format sheet out. I'm not here to play your little Jersey game. Who gives a damn about Scott Pollard? Ain't nobody here for Scott Pollard. I'm here for one thing and one thing only. I'm here to talk about Leon Ruff, Damian Priest, and Johnny Gargano. That's the only reason I'm on the show this week. Now, who are we kidding here, Scotty? Like, call me, all respect to the late great Duke Ellington, but it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that sting. Doo-wop, doo-wop, doo-wop.
This is going to be one of the greatest shows ever tonight. The Godfather's pumped up. I'm pumped up. This guy's not pumped up because he can't get any fucking scores. Or maybe he can. The conscience of Place to Be Nation, Mr. Steve Willey.
Are you ready for this? That's my Kenny Omega song. I'm going to bash through the paper. I'm talking to the camera as the announcers talk over me every episode. I'm here for this. I am happy that you are happy, Scott, that the witch is dead. I mean, that Chris Jericho, Frank Kazarian match you're referring to there. Huge.
Oh, God. That's right.
The stuff we have to talk about, like, I'm very excited because I actually watched AEW live. Well, not live. It was a little bit like an hour delayed. And so I saw Nate said, boy, there's a 5-star reveal I saw in a text. I'm like, ooh, Okada? Is it like a New Japan? I got really excited knowing it was coming. And I'm like, oh, okay. This is actually, if Nate should have said, this is a 6.25-star reveal for him.
We way past the Meltzer scale on this one, Steve Willey. Like there are no ratings. Like how can you rate love, Steve Willey?
one star for each decade of his life.
Anyway, we will talk about that tonight. Boy, we got a lot to talk about. Of course, we're talking about the big episode this past Wednesday of AEW Dynamite. We have a new AEW World Champion. Of course, we're talking about the cleaner, Kenny Omega. So now, after a year and a half of everyone saying, "Ah, there's no nepotism," in two-thirds of the VPs have the belts now, and the other one had a belt for a long time. So you know, but frankly, those are the guys that probably deserve them or should have them anyway. But we'll talk about that tonight. So we'll talk about that. We'll look ahead. We'll see what's going on with AEW and Impact, and of course, as the Godfather mentioned, huge debut last night, or not even debut. Can a guy that old debut, I guess, as he joins his, what, fifth promotion, the man they call Sting. His t-shirt sold out in only two, or the biggest t-shirt sales in 24 hours in pro wrestling tees history.
Actually, we're just now hitting 24 hours. Like, he broke the record at, I think, about 3:00 this afternoon.
Yeah, pretty much. And the best part about pro wrestling tees, admittedly, because I've gotten stuff, as you guys have, they make the shirt order by order. It's like, you know, it's like Duchess. So you get it. So they'll never run out. Let's put it that way. It's not out of stock. But that's not all we'll talk about tonight. As Nate mentioned, one of the deliciously awesome matches we will discuss. There is I wouldn't say a pay-per-view, but it is a network special this Sunday, NXT TakeOver War Games. Yes, so we'll preview that tonight. There is some New Japan news. Steve is digging through all the paperwork underneath his TNT ratings of Jazz Sonics G4 1993. Did it do better than the Tango and Cash TNT movie at midnight? So we'll talk about that. And of course, in the B block, after our break and plugs, I had the shoe for the greatest GWCW match picks, and I picked a couple of doozies, and they kind of go in line with the theme of this coming Monday's senior video episode, which will be dropping this coming Monday on the Place to Be Wrestling Network feed. My good friend Rory McNamara and I had a good show, and I took two matches from the theme of that show that I think these two gentlemen, hopefully liked. So, both legendary matches, nothing out of the ordinary, but two different eras of this guy, so also very cool. All right. But first, though, we do have, Nate did mention Scott Pollard. He's the only one of the three guys that wore number 62 that didn't ever wear any rings. I'm glad you picked him, Nate, and not the other two guys. But because the two guys actually did have some jewelry. Jim Langer wore number 62, but he, of course, was one of the guys who tipped the champagne every year with Bob Greasy and, well, no longer Don Shula, but he was on the 72 undefeated Dolphins. And Guy McIntyre, for all you West Coast fans, like Todd Weber and those guys and the gang, as the, of course, he was Joe Montana and Steve Young's blindside blocker on those awesome 49er teams of the 80s and early 90s. So he's got, what, four rings? And Jim Langer's got, I think, two rings because he played on both Dolphins. So we had some, even though 62 guys is a very, rare, unheralded number, a lot of championships on those guys. And Scott Pollard might have been one of the guys crying when Jim Donahue called 800 fouls in the 2002 Western Conference Finals. I think he was on the Kings, right, Nate?
Was he? Yeah, him. He was on that Weber, the Weber team.
So he sat back and watched not only Tim Donahue's fouls, but, you know, Peja Stojakovic's nine air balls in the overtime of Game 7, which, by the way, Kings fans, that's why you lost that series, because Peja could not put the ball in the ocean if he was standing in the sand. Let's just remember that, okay? Enough of this Tim Donahue 800 fouls nonsense.
The only reason Pollard was on the team was because Vladdy needed a night off every now and then.
Exactly. So, also, guys, before we dive into our cornucopia of fun and games, we would be remiss, of course, if we did not discuss tonight. And I'm going to talk about it. You'll also hear about me talk about it with the doctor this weekend on the NWA Saturday special. We lost a sad loss in the wrestling family this week. At the age of 79, we lost the inaugural WWWF Intercontinental Champion, the man who invented, arguably, guys, pretty much every wrestling fan's favorite match, gimmick match in the history of wrestling. That is, of course, the Royal Rumble match. I'm, of course, speaking about Pat Patterson, who passed away on Wednesday at the age of 79 from cancer. I know a lot of younger fans, guys, know Pat as a stooge with Gerald Briscoe, and they dressed in drag in 2000 for the hardcore title and did other funny, goofy things, and they wore underwear with track marks, etc. But that's not the Pat Patterson that we know. The Pat Patterson that we know was an amazing wrestler in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. Great tag team partner with Ray Stevens in Roy Shire's San Francisco territory, wrestled in Portland with the LaBelles in L.A., big West Coast guy, and of course, he was one of Vince Sr.'s trusted stalwarts in the history of the WWWF. And of course, he's one of the guys that Vince Jr. kept loyal along with Ernie Skoland and Gorilla when Vince Jr. took over for Vince Sr. Nate, your thoughts on the legacy and the greatness that is Pat Patterson.
It's funny that you would say, like, our younger listeners probably would only know of Pat from that stage where him and Gerald Briscoe were the Stooges, because I'm in that camp. You know, not that I'm that much younger than you and Steve, although, you know, black don't crack. So I could pass for a teen in a high school musical. I could get my Jason Priestley on and play a high schooler at the age of 40. I could do it. but like, you know, because I grew up watching WCW, the NWA.
Right.
And so, like, I didn't even really get into the WWF until Hogan got there.
Right.
So, like, I didn't know about Patterson as an in-ring performer really until, you know, not the network era, but like the WWE 24/7 era, when it used to be like the cable channel.
Yep. Yep.
So you're talking like early 2000s, maybe mid 2000s. Like, I didn't really see a lot of historic WWF and WWF matches until that time period. And so, you know, now with the network, it's even better because you've got everything at access, whether it's on your phone, on your tablet, on your TV. And so, you know, getting a chance to go back and look and like, oh yeah, he was more than just this comedic figure. But even more so than like his in-ring stuff, I think you have to give him credit. And everybody this week has been giving him credit for, his mind in terms of the business. And like you said, coming up with the Rumble, being a mentor for, you know, a lot of the wrestlers coming up. And so, like, anytime you lose somebody like that, that's a knowledge base that can't be replaced. And so, yeah, like, I didn't have, like, a deep connection with Patterson just because I didn't come around, and you know, to him until I was, you know, in my 20s. But I think, like, just hearing people talk, like, even like, I know how you feel about that man, John Moxley, Scotty, but even the fact that, you know, on the night where this is arguably his biggest match in AEW, going up against Kenny Omega, and the final word of his promo is a tribute to Pat Patterson. You know, that shows you the, like, the effect that this one person had on the industry and on the business. And yeah, like, that's something that can't be replaced. But fortunately, you know, Steve, like, the lessons and kind of just his outlook on the business, I think, has been passed down. And, you know, so he might not be with us anymore, but like, what he meant to the business can still carry on.
Oh, definitely. It is a little bit, it always bothered me that a lot of what we saw when he was younger was that when we were younger was that kind of skid mark stuff and like the evening gown type matches, because in a way it was, and he obviously agreed to do it, but it was, I think it was kind of disrespectful to his legacy of probably being like not the first openly gay out of the closet, you know, wrestler,
right?
But definitely the most famous. And yeah. So that always kind of bothered me. But as you said, Scott, you know, knowing, you know, as we got smartened up, I guess you could say that the effect that he had on like the Royal Rumble, which is my, you know, my favorite match to watch, and how he designed a lot of it and the work that goes into it. And you could see like when people don't know what they're doing with it, how bad it could be. But kind of a personal thing. The Royal Rumble in Pittsburgh, which was the first kind of event I went with a bunch of like the Place to Be Nation people. Afterwards, I went to drop Jordan off his hotel, and it was where the wrestlers were. And sure enough, Pat Patterson was one of the people that were walking through, and he looked a little perturbed to be around all these massive amounts of wrestling fans trying to like, you know, get in at some of the bar action. It was pretty. But he did stop to take a picture with Jordan's son, which is the only person he stopped for, was the one kid. And I thought, man, that's a pretty cool thing, because he clearly did not look happy to be around all these people. But to still do that with Jordan's kid, I thought was very special. I've actually probably know more about him the last couple of years from reading about him. I have his book, which I'd started, put aside, but I'm definitely going to pick it up now after he's passed. But to see all the great stories from behind the scene where I've kind of just engulfed all the Andre the Giant stuff that's come out over the last couple of years, like the newest book that came out this year, which is an incredible biography of Andre. You know, there's some behind the scenes stuff with how much time that Andre and Pat stayed together. Pat was kind of his handler for quite a long time before Tim White was. And so lots of stories of them hanging out. Just seemed like a really cool guy. And like you said, Nate, so many people outpouring with support. John Cena, The Rock. The Rock doesn't often come out and talk about wrestlers and wrestling anymore. So a lot of pictures of the two of them together that I've seen today and yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, living up here in the Northeast, I see guys around the area. I used to see the Fink at my laundromat. I think I've said that on this show before when he passed away. I thought I did. Oh, maybe that was a Saturday special. Yeah, Nate.
This load of laundry is scheduled for one fall.
Exactly. This is the softening agent on a pole match. The winner is the towel that does have the fabric softener attached to it. Yeah. No, we used to sit and talk, and he used to sit and, the Fink was the trivia nerd of WWE. We used to talk about wrestling. He was a Mets fan. He liked the Jets. So we used to talk about, and I seen Pat Patterson at multiple restaurants around this area in Southern Fairfield County here in Connecticut. I saw him at an Italian place, a few miles from here. I'm not one of those people that walks up to people at like restaurants and stuff like that. That's not the place to do that. But I did wave and I just said hi and he waved hi back and that was it. That's all I did. Just to acknowledge I'm a fan, cool. Mr. Patterson, I continue eating. I'm not going to bother you. I had friends who same restaurant, probably, I don't know, 15 years earlier, I think it was 99. This woman, my friend's wife or ex-wife now, chased Triple H in China out of the restaurant looking for autographs and was banging on their like limo window. And it was ugly. It was very ugly. I'm not that kind of guy, but Pat was very nice. Just wanted to acknowledge that
Scotty's like, I'm not that kind of guy. I'll just wait for Hunter at his hotel room.
I'll just wait till he gets out of the car there. Then bother him at the hotel. Yeah, exactly. You got to pick your spots. God, I've seen Triple H at my work. He's come after me, No.
Scott hops on his 10 wheeler.
My 10 speed.
Yeah, 10 speed with the bike chasing after.
Oh god. Come on! I know I didn't want you to eat your spaghetti. Rest in peace, Pat. You brought so much to this business. Go on the network. I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of individual matches. Pat was a lot on the All-Star Wrestling show that's on the network that in like, 78, 79, 80, 81. I'm pretty sure the street fight with Slaughter from 81 is on the network. I don't know where. I don't think the house show is on there.
They'll probably
put up
a collection here pretty soon, too.
Yeah, I would have thought there would be. Yeah.
Looks like they put up one on YouTube today.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So, and I'm sure it'll be on the network too. If you want to look for it, cool. I have a feeling there'll be a Pat thing. Hopefully it's not a lot of the Stooge nonsense, him and Briscoe haggling over the hardcore title. I mean, that was fun. Don't get me wrong. It was a lot of fun, but that's not the essence of Pat. I mean, we need to see, and now sadly guys, that's the fourth Legends House guy that we've lost. We've lost, speaking of Fink, we lost Fink. We lost Pat. We lost Mean Gene.
Yeah.
And lost Piper. So four of the, how many guys was it? 12? Yeah, I think it was 12 guys, right? I think it was 12 or 10, something like that. Or maybe it was only 8, now that I think about it. Who's left? Hillbilly Jim, Duggan, Jimmy Hart, Tony Atlas. I think that's it, right? Did I miss anybody? I'm going to have to check. Well, we're talking. I'll have to look it up. I'm trying to think.
Was Lou in the house?
Captain Lou? No, Captain Lou was not on it. I think he had passed away by then. I think. Let me see. So anyway, rest in peace, Pat Patterson. One of the greatest of all time. And did you see, guys? I think it was on WWE's website. I think WWE actually created a tournament bracket from September 1st, 1979 in Rio de Janeiro. And it had some interesting people in it. Pat got a bye in the semifinals because the great Hossein Arab and Mr. X went to a draw.
Oh, yeah. Classic. Really? Broadway.
Really? The Iron Sheik couldn't beat fucking Mr. X? Really? Come on. Said Mr. X lays down for absolutely nobody. So, was Mr. X a sexy boy? Johnny Rods was in. I think it was Johnny Rods made it to the final, and Pat beat him in the finals. So there you go. It did happen in Stadium de Janeiro or some name in Rio. So there was a tournament, and there you go. And Pat Patterson, of course, won the title.
Hopefully, we can do a live watch of that.
Exactly what I want. Let's see, original programming, current shows, former shows. I'm trying to find Legends House. I'm trying to find the guys. Pretty sure that we got everybody. I think it was 8 guys. I think it was Piper, Mean Gene, Pat, Tony Atlas, Duggan, Fink, Hillbilly Jim. I think that was it. Yeah, something like that. It's about 8 guys, and I think half of them we've lost half of them now, so very sad. I know they wanted to do like a second year with Hogan in it, but you know, things happened as well. So I wasn't flying. So anyway, rest in peace, Pat Patterson. And we'll talk, other shows will talk about Pat. Dr. G will give his thoughts on Pat Patterson on this week's episode of the Saturday Special. So, all right. Let's dive into the first topic tonight. This past Wednesday, winter blew through Jacksonville. And maybe the biggest dynamite that AEW has put together to this point. And, of course, the highlight was the AEW World Championship match between John Dean Ambrosley and Kenny Crazy Eyes, which I knew was probably hopefully going to be a good match. It's going to have to be carried anyway. Also scheduled for this evening, Chris Jericho and Frankie Kay, as Steve mentioned, and the second annual AEW Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal, plus a bunch of other great matches as well. So, the Battle Royal began, was the first thing. We have JR with Tony and Excalibur. We have the Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal. I don't know what was this for, Steve? Was there a stip or something? Future title match? Yeah,
last year, this is what, when before the TNT title, they established the ring that MJF carries around.
Right.
So it was for that ring, the final two people in the Battle Royal, as they did last year, then go in a one-on-one match to determine who gets this, you know, $50,000 or whatever ring. So, yeah, MJF is the current holder of that ring, and he made the finals again against your boy, Orange Cassidy.
Oh, God. I don't know who to root for. So so it'll be Orange Cassidy and MJF next week, and MJF will defend his ring. All right. Then we had Frankie Kay and Chris Jericho was next. What are your thoughts on that match, Steve? You said it was the best match of the night.
No, actually, Frankie Kazarian they've been pushing him a bit as like a mid-carder who, you know, he's – you know, 22, 23 years into the business, really hasn't gotten much of his due as a singles wrestler in the past, gosh, decade or so, since he's been tagging up. So they've been giving him some matches. And Jericho, you know, feels like he's kind of wrapping things up in terms of in-ring, because he's been doing a lot of these matches. Like, he had a match with Christopher Daniels recently, and the two of them, you know, like people he hasn't been in the ring with, despite having both of them having a very long career. So it was a pretty good match. And the end of it also, as well as the Battle Royal, played into the inner circle and no one trusting each other since MJF won a spot in there. So MJF came out to throw in the towel, even though Frankie Kazarian had Jericho in like a weak-looking Boston Crab. So there's a lot of dissension, and Jericho has said, that's it, next week we're either all going to agree to get along or we're disbanding the inner circle. They seem to be kind of leaning towards Sammy Guevara going out on his own. There's lots of little teases here and there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Do you think the inner circle's run its course?
I don't think so, Steve. I think especially with the addition of MJF, like, it's too early to blow things up. Mm-hmm. But I do think they love messing with people. And so I feel like we're going to get maybe one or two more of these like breakup angles before they finally pull the trigger. Cause it reminds me of, like, I think people need to remember, like, this is the same dude that I know Kevin Owens had something to do with it, but if you look back at like the Owens Jericho thing, like, you could tell that's Jericho. He's got his handprints all over that, you know, with the Festival of Friendship and how long they dragged that storyline out, and until they finally, like, when you finally thought things were back to where they should be, that's when they pulled the trigger on the breakup. I think that's what you're going to get from the Inner Circle, where we had this will they, won't they for a few months. And then when you finally think that everybody's on the same page, that's when MJF and Wardlow strike out against the other guys.
Yeah. There's still a lot there in terms of Wardlow and Jake Hager constantly staring everything at, you know, each other down. Mm-hmm. It's just pretty funny because neither of them talk, so they just stare at each other constantly. my only real disappointment with this is I feel like Santana Ortiz get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
And they're just so talented and that they should be getting a little bit more of an opportunity. And I know that their tag team division is absolutely loaded, probably more so than their singles division, to be honest. And to see guys such as them just, you know, barely even have matches at this point, even on Dark.
If only, Steve, there were some other talent pool of tag teams that they could interact with. I know it sounds crazy, Steve, but what if there were another, almost like another promotion, so to speak, where we could kind of mix up talent?
I don't know. I mean, like the Spanish announce team. Yeah, that could be like Disco Inferno and Alex Wright.
The Harris brothers. Like, we need to find out what Ron and Don are doing. We got to bring them back.
We do. The church, the disciples of the church.
Where's Malice? Isn't he
the
dead?
Flying Elvises.
Sonny Siaki. Where's he now? We'll get back to our guy, Sonny Siaki, boys, after the new year. I'm excited. That is, if I can watch fucking the shows. We'll get to that in the next, our next topic. All right. So Jericho wins, and we have the Inner Circle. Backstage, the Young Bucks versus TH2, announced for next week in a backstage interview segment with Marvez. Max Caster and Anthony Bowens tell Marvez to take a hike, and the Bucks get sneak attacked from behind. So there we go. Of course, the Bucks are the tag team champions. The next match. Oh, look, it's an AEW women's match. I'd rather paint my nails. Dr. Britt Baker, who should be in it. She should just be in NXT, really. Against legit Layla Hirsch. Tony says, what a bitch. Wow. Tough Tony. Your thoughts on this one, Steve?
I was all right. Layla Hirsch, this is my first time seeing her. I knew that she was on Dark, and I heard that she's supposedly pretty tough, like an MMA background, but she's legit 4'11". She's very, very tiny. So it was a fairly competitive match, with Britt Baker kind of underestimating her and Rebel kind of stooging around. But it was more to build up the aftermath when Thunder Rosa came out of nowhere and attacked Britt Baker to continue their newly started feud from a week or two ago. So you'll get Thunder Rosa kicking Britt Baker's ass at some point, Scott, and I know you will enjoy seeing that.
Oh, I will. I will very
much.
She's
blown up big time, Thunder Rosa.
Well, it's because she's amazing.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm okay with her staying in AEW. I'm okay with everything about AEW now because they made a smart, creative decision on this evening. But more on that.
Yeah, and like we've talked about, like if she's not able to work, or some of the people in like NWA, AWM aren't able to work as much, let them. You know, let them make money and let them work both. You know, both promotions. What difference does it make? It gives her more opportunities and puts more eyes on your product.
Exactly. And God only knows what the NWA is doing right now. That's another. We'll get to that topic in a little bit. Next up, we have a pretty nice tag here. What are your thoughts on Britt Baker, Nate? I want to ask you because she was kind of like the highlight face of this division from the beginning. Yeah. And I feel like she's lost in the shuffle. She hasn't won the belt yet. Like, what are your thoughts on her?
I think in ring she's still improving. Like she's not like when she first started with the company. I was like, yeah, this is not living up to the hype. She's gotten better mm-hmm. since then, but even more so than that, I feel like her character work has really carried her this past year, particularly when she was hurt. So like, I love the character. I love that she's got Rebel / Reba like as this abusive like. Worker, like employer-employee relationship. So I think there's a lot you can do with Britt Baker. Unfortunately, the weakness of the division and like the lack of experienced talent in the division doesn't allow her to really get into the mix. And so again, like I feel like once we get to the final thing that happened on this program, like there's some big opportunities for Britt Baker in 2021 if what we were led to believe at the end of the show is something that is not just a one-off and it's something that might continue into next year.
Man, that's a great point that I didn't even think about, Nate, is what if it's not just, Kenny and Don Callis, as we'll get to. And there's been some teasing of, the tag teams back and forth. Yeah. But I completely lost track of the women's division. It didn't even cross my mind until you said that, because I was thinking, well, I was going to counteract with, Sheeta looks like she's going to start a program with a Baden, who we talked about in the last episode. Should, where did she go? They had a couple appearances, and then what if? So they're looking like they're going to have a program there. But yeah, the entire roster of Impact's women, as much as I just said, the tag team division in AEW is, second to none. We've talked many times over the show that the women's division in Impact is second to none. All right. Well, next off, we had the tag match between Cody and Darby Allin versus Team Taz of Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. This was set up as the continuing feud between Darby and Team Taz, and Cody was added to that. And it was made a little bit personal after Cody and Taz were going into it and said, hey, your son Taz, he trains with me. And so Taz choked him out.
Your son Hook.
Yeah, yes. Like, do you think he named him Hook because of, he's like a shooter? Taz always thought he was a shooter. Or because he's from like the Red Hook District, in New York.
I mean, to quote Archer, like a little column A, a little column B. Like I think like, yeah. And it's crazy because we'll talk about Taz a little bit later when we get to the Kings of Sport Patreon plug, Steve, because we talked about Taz this week on the show. But I think they've done a really good job with some of these older veterans. And we'll talk about another older veteran here in a second. But Taz as this grumpy, grizzled, pissed off head coach almost for Cage, Ricky Starks, and Powerhouse Hobbs. I like the fit with these guys.
Oh, very much so. More so for me than Arn and Cody and even Tully and FTR. That it helps. Cage can talk a little bit, and Starks can definitely talk, but it's kind of a fun little group. And Taz, he pulls dual roles. He also does a dark commentary with Excalibur. And before this angle really hit its stride, he was still doing commentary on Dynamite from time to time. Mm-hmm. And he just seems to be really having fun with it at that. And being able to, with Hobbs a newcomer, Starks new to TV, it just elevates them. And they're big on their factions, and this is one of the more fun factions. I didn't know who David Hobbs was, or Will Hobbs. See, I don't even know his first name. Will Hobbs was. I had zero attachment to Ricky Starks, as I didn't see him in an NWA. And Brian Cage, a physical specimen, but in terms of my fandom of him, I can take him or leave him. But put them all together in a nice package and have Taz as their mouthpiece, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah, and I think just when you look at somebody like Will Hobbs, he's somebody that could very easily get lost in the shuffle. But pairing him with Taz, pairing him with a guy like Ricky Starks who can talk as well, he's like the secondary mouthpiece for the group. But they've fitted him in the Taz colors, and like they've just taken advantage of his powers and stuff. And so, yeah, I think like this is a good spot for all three of the guys in Team Taz right now, where, you know, eventually down the line, like all three could be major single stars for this company, I think. But right now, this is kind of a good place to let them cut their teeth for a bit.
Right, and it gives Darby Allin three challengers for his belt as well. Finish of this was Cody and Darby Allin getting the win with a combined. Cody did the crossroads, and then Darby with the coffin drop onto Ricky Starks. Afterwards, Cage comes out. Then Dustin Rhodes comes out. Then Taz gets involved, so it's 4-on-3. And then the lights go out. And there's some snow that starts to come down because winter is coming.
So did you watch this before or after you knew who it was going to be, Steve?
I didn't know. I knew from you saying that there was a big reveal. And so I figured it was going to be coming in the main event. I figured there was going to be some sort of post-match, like, you know, something big. And so when the lights went off, I'm just like, you know, didn't really think anything from it. And then, you know, the snow started coming. I'm like, no way, this can't be. And then,
well, see, because my thought, I was like, and this is no disrespect to this individual, because like he was good back in the day. And I talked to him on a podcast once and he was really nice. But I'm seeing all this snow and I'm like, Cody Rhodes, if you bring back Glacier in 2020, we're gonna have some words here. And I was thinking that like for the first maybe 15, 20 seconds of this video. But then all of a sudden, Steve, like in the middle of this snow, there was a conspicuous bird just perched on the snow. And I was like, oh.
Yes, and the man called Sting walks out, baseball bat and all. And he knew he was coming for the good guys because he came out of the good guy's side.
Yes.
When he came out of the right, that means you're good. And, you know, everyone bails and he just kind of looks at Cody.
Real quick, before we get to like what Sting does, like I think just the fact that you had Team Taz, who have been established as badasses, like one of my favorite little bits that people do when they wrestle Sting is like the bad guy cower. Like the group cower, or like the NWO used to do it. Immortal used to do it in TNA. The Authority did it in the WWE. Whenever Sting comes out, like he's one guy, like an old guy at that at this point with a baseball bat. And you got Hobbs, Starks, Taz, and Cage just like they've seen a ghost.
Mm-hmm. And they kind of have, to be honest. I thought Tony Schiavone did great here.
Yes.
Because Sting immediately goes up to Arn Anderson and, you know, he's already talking about, man, it's been how long since he's been on TNT. The last time we saw him on TNT was the last day of you know, basically saying without saying, but of Nitro and WCW. He's, you know, long history with Arn Anderson. So Arn's like kind of a little bit scared. He goes over to Cody, but then like the goosebump moment for me. So when he just went up to Darby and kind of looks at one side of his face, which is bare, you know, not with paint, and then the other side that has paint. And it just, they kept the shot.
Yeah, for like a tight shot too.
Yeah, for a little bit longer than they needed to on purpose. Like, okay, this is where they're going. Mm-hmm. And there's always been, like when AEW started and Schiavone and Jim Ross, and they didn't really know who any of these guys were, you know, kind of saying, yo, you know, Darby reminds me of a young Stinger, you know, like they play that up and just the
earlier this year, like Darby did the gimmick where he was sitting in the crowd watching Cody.
Yep. So, yeah, that was a pretty cool moment. And then that was pretty much it for that segment. But yeah, shocker, the fans.
Yeah, like that segment was.
Yes. 44 degrees outside, and they're sitting up there under a little.
I think that's part of what made this moment, Steve, is that we actually, I think they said it was like 1,000 or so people in the building, and it actually, like you compare this to when Matt Hardy debuted, which should have been this huge moment on TV, and it was less than because you had this empty arena or an arena with just wrestlers in it. Whereas with this, actual fans, and you could actually have a little bit of a reaction from the crowd. And so, like you said, like Sting comes out, which is a big surprise because, like, I don't think many people guessed that he would be showing up. You know, like people knew that his WWE contract had lapsed, but like that happens all the time with the legends. Like it's they got to haggle about money and they re-sign another legends deal. But with this, like you had like the shock of Sting coming back. He had the Shivani call. He walks up to Arn. He looks at Dustin, and then like I love the Darby stuff, but I think my favorite part of this moment, besides the Darby stuff, was like because Cody's like kind of lay down in the corner, and Sting just kind of kneels down, and instead of like he's got this weird look on his face, Steve, where it looks like he's trying to figure out what Cody's deal is right now. Because
mm-hmm.
Cody's been kind of playing subtle heel for the last couple months,
right?
And so like, yeah, and then, so like they're setting the seeds not only for Darby, but I think like there's a good chance we might get a Cody Sting match next year out of this.
Yeah, possibly. I'm not, you know, I have to stick by my beliefs that, you know, as all the years that we've been doing these and me saying like, man, I don't want to see The Undertaker wrestle. I don't want to see Shawn Michaels wrestle. You know, I'm weary of a 61-year-old Sting wrestling because I don't like his two single matches. One, they turn into a ridiculous comedy match. And the second one, you know, Seth Rollins straight up injured him. So, you know, like, is it something they do like they did with DDP and put him like in a tag? You know, or Sting and Darby brothers in paint.
I think what we're going to get, Steve, because I agree. Like, I don't want to see Sting put himself in a position where he'll get hurt again. But I think what we'll get is two matches at least out of this contract. The first one will be a six-man with Sting, Kobe, and Darby versus Team Taz. Mm-hmm. And I think you could probably even, like, I don't know if it'll headline a pay-per-view, but, like, it could be the co-main to a pay-per-view. And then the other match I think you'd get is a Cody-Sting match. And with that, that's where you have to kind of pull out all the bells and whistles. And, like, Sting, like, if he takes any bumps at all, like, it'll be like the, like, remember when Hogan used to, like, when Hogan was through taking bumps and he'd, like, take a punch and then just kind of lean in the corner? Like, Hogan never left his feet? I think mm-hmm. that's what they'll do with Sting. Like, they're going to take care of him. Like, I don't think they would put Sting in a position where he would hurt himself. Because I think, you know, people have been talking all day about the WWE version of Sting and what would be different with this version. And I think with the WWE, not to say anything negative about him, but I think with them, it was a situation where, like, they respected Sting and, like, he was this chief rival they had all these years. So they respected him, but they didn't love him. Whereas with Cody, like, Cody and those EVP guys, like, they grew up on Sting.
Right.
So I think there's a different level. Like, they want to take care of Sting. Like, it's like the difference between somebody that works with your dad versus your cousin that, you know, kind of would come to Christmas or come to Thanksgiving and just looked up to your dad. Like, there's a different level of reverence than he might have had in the WWE. I think, like, they'll go out of their way, Steve, I think, to put Sting in a position where he wouldn't hurt himself.
I hope so, because, you know, you convinced me of it there, and then all of a sudden I think of Matt Hardy. But yeah. I also think Sting is smarter than Matt Hardy.
Yeah, Sting's smarter than that. And I also think, like, there's a difference between, like, a legend coming in. Not that Matt Hardy isn't great, but he's an active competitor on the roster.
Right.
And he's out there trying to hang with these 20-somethings, whereas Sting's not going to come out here trying for topes. That's not Sting. Like, he did it that one time against Seth Rollins, and he's like, nope, not doing that again.
Here's a question I have. Obviously, the injury that Sting had was not... First of all, it was a great moment. I actually watched it on YouTube today. The AEW YouTube page did the show in pieces, and I watched it. And it's an amazing moment.
Yeah.
And for once, AEW's T-shirt is actually pretty cool. We talked about it before.
Yeah. Yes,
it actually wasn't
like
bad.
The T-shirt, the hat, the hoodie. Like, they had that Sting merch ready.
Oh, yeah. That shit was been printed since, like, probably October. Here's the question. I have no issues with Sting in AEW. I think it's amazing. Big moment. Yes, a lack of a crowd. Like, my opinion, the pop at the 2014 Survivor Series was better.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, that was a full boat. WrestleMania match aside. I would like to have seen Sting. Now, see, if things were booked differently, it would have been cool to see Sting be WWE champion. I think he earned it.
Yeah.
Nobody gave a fuck about Seth Rollins at that point. He ended up getting hurt. Like I would have put that four-way tournament that they did at Survivor Series that year.
Mm-hmm.
I would have put Sting. At that point, you couldn't because Sting was fucked up. But had he not gotten hurt, I would have put Sting in that match.
Mm.
And
honestly, I think if Sting doesn't get hurt, he might have won that match. Like, I'm not sure if Rollins was always going to be the winner of that match.
Yeah, I don't either. And if he wasn't, I think he would have been – well, yeah, I think Sting would have been replaced somebody in that four-way at Survivor Series. And I think he'd have won the title. Holds it for a couple months, you know, whatever. Loses it at Mania and then – or loses it at the Rumble or whatever and whatever. Do we think that AEW – because AEW had always said, and I'm not looking to pick a fight here, but I am going to play devil's advocate. AEW has always said that they were in one, they're doing their thing and WWE's doing their thing. But is getting Sting trying to lure that 50 plus demographic that does watch NXT and does watch WWE? You think they're trying to rope them in? Is AEW trying to play a little, not dirty, because this isn't dirty whatsoever, but trying to do what they said in the beginning they weren't going to do?
Yes, but also I think, you know, I'm going to improv this. Yes, and I think like that's obviously part of the equation here, Scotty. But even more to the point, the fact that you have Sting on TNT with Tony Schiavone, with, you know, the Arn Anderson interaction, like I think they're trying for an audience that hasn't come back to wrestling since 2001. Like they're trying for the big fish, like the mythical lapsed fan that never came back. Like that's right. Who I think they're looking at more so than even like the 50 plus crowd that is watching NXT right now.
Right. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I agree with that as well. There was definitely trying to pull up a WCW vibe in that segment. And at quite a bit of times, you know, with Cody being such a fan of that, you know, that's why Tully's there, why Arn is there, why they're, you know, we're trying to do war games, you know, why they're trying to do like a Bash at the Beach type show and all these theme shows, like even this one, Winter's Coming, they're trying to develop new ones like that.
Like people say, I love WCW, Steve Willie. I don't think I love WCW half as much as Cody Rhodes, because Cody Rhodes like even puts my fandom to shame.
That's true. So no, I just think it's a good question, but yeah, I think Cody is happy to have Sting there, but I don't think he's going to wrestle. It's one thing to have like a knee problem or a foot problem or, you know, a hip replacement, neck and back stuff. I don't know. I'm not saying that you don't want Cody to be too careful, because then the match will be garbage if you're kid gloving it too much. Mm. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes.
There are two different matches, because I think in the tag match, you can just have Sting wait for a hot tag and just have him do offense.
Right.
And not take any bumps. Whereas with Cody, I think you do a bit of what they did with the Triple H match, where you pull out the bells and whistles, the Nightmare Family, you know, you team Taz. Like there's a lot of gaga, as Hulk Hogan would say.
Yes.
And so that way you kind of cloak the fact that Sting can't go to the ground. Like he can't do that anymore, nor should we want to see that. But
correct.
I do feel again, Scotty, like to my point about, because I saw a lot of people kind of trying to bash the WWE today, and I wouldn't go that far. I think they did, for the most part, they did the best with Sting that they could. I think they had a lot of respect for Sting, but I do think there's a difference between respect, which is what the WWE had for Sting, and like this love that you can tell Cody Rhodes has for Sting.
Right. No, I understand that. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think WWE just wanted to tick Sting off their checklist of, see, we finally got you.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Yeah.
And I'm glad Sting did it, because again, like, I think that's a part of his career that would have been the what if he'd never gone there. So I'm happy in that sense that he went there. But I like this too, Scotty, because it feels like, you know, he never got a proper goodbye in TNA. He never got a proper goodbye in the WWE. So like, if this is what Sting wants to kind of write the own end to his story, then I'm cool with it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I think we'll see. I'll be curious to see what where the path goes from here on out. We get a couple of promos after that. We go to a break. Then Alex Marvez interviews our women's world champion, Hikaru Shida. Shida ensures us she is not afraid of Abaddon. What is it, Steve?
Takahashi.
Okay, good. Fair enough. It's the prefectural gym or whatever. Then we have a John Dean Ambroxley promo. He can now mention his wife because his wife doesn't work for the company. But, you know, people actually like her, so stop mentioning her and she won't be as hated as you. Next. Sting speaks next week.
Mm-hmm.
Nate will be ready for that.
That next week's show, like, I think next week, it's particularly with what happens in the main event, you're already promoting Sting. Like, they might get close to a million, Scotty. Don't want to jinx it, but they might.
They might. No, they might very well get close to it. I agree. So we're back from break, and all of a sudden, Don Callis, is introduced as a special guest commentator, personally requested by his longtime friend, Kenneth Aloysius Omega, who, of course, that's like when Austin and Rock wanted JR to do the main event of WrestleMania 15. Thank God he did. And now we get to our main event, gentlemen, the AEW World Championship. The guy that should have it versus the guy that shouldn't have it. I'm such a dick, aren't I? Now time for me to clean the slate, be objective. I knew this match was probably going to be pretty good. I think we all knew that. I don't know. You were watching, guys. Did they start right around 9:30? Was this about 30 minutes? Probably.
They actually kind of pre-gamed it a little bit. Your promo and then the entrances took up a little bit of time, and they were pretty clear even before the show started that they were going to give it quite a long time. Like Tony Khan had like a presser, and that they were, you know, willing to give the whole hour to it. And they did the thing like, you know, if this goes the whole hour, we're not, TNT's given us the time to go over. And they didn't need it, but
which again, like I love Tony Khan. Like, I think Tony Khan is, like, as opposed to somebody like a Dixie Carter who had no business running a company, I feel like Tony Khan's at least trying to do the right thing in most instances. But yeah, this was complete BS, as Tony Schiavone would say later in the show, because there's no way TNT's like, yeah, we're going to give you an extra hour to cut into our showing of Fast and Furious 6. That's not going to happen. And like, I think it adds to the end of the match, though, because, like, we'll talk about it in depth later, but the way Kenny is running out of the arena, I think part of that was to get the story over. But the other part of it is because, like, they literally had 2 minutes before 10 o'clock.
We're out of time.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that. This isn't Raw, where no one cares about USA's crap programming, right?
No. Like, TNT's like, we've sold advertisers based on this movie, and we are not going to fuck that up.
Exactly. This isn't La Femme Nikita or Pacific Blue or something.
Yeah. Yep.
I always like using this example. Or Rizzoli and Isles.
Mm.
Although Angie Harmon, hachi-machi. she's hot. So great match. Good back and forth. Overall chemistry between the two, Steve. Because the last time we watched them, the last time they had a huge match was that throw shit around, fall on crap, garbage, dumpster thing at whatever pay-per-view that was. Was that Full Gear last year? No.
Double or Nothing. The original
Double or Nothing. Yeah, yep. The match was like longer than Triple H and Shawn in the cell at Bad Blood 04.
Yeah, like the barbed wire nest.
And, yeah, yep. 79 minutes or whatever. They wrapped it around some fucking bed frame or whatever nonsense that was. This is much different, and I admittedly, I would have taken this match a lot more seriously. When it came to actually wrestling, how was their chemistry?
I thought it was pretty good. The only thing they backed themselves up to was hyping this as, you know, Omega is returning to the best bout machine, so you give it really high expectations. And, you know, it's not the only company even this year who's done the same thing with Edge and Orton, so... It didn't necessarily live up to that kind of standard, but I thought it was a good 4-star match. They gave it enough time and as a little similar to a New Japan match, and that they started working on the ground and then they took it to the floor for a while, then came back in, kind of gradually picked it up until you went to all the, you know, had some false finishes, like Ambrose hit the paradigm shift, but Kenny kicked out, and, you know, there were lots of fights for the one-winged angel, and, you know, so I thought the chemistry overall was pretty good, but if you're expecting Omega Okada types, you know, symmetry, you're not going to get that.
I think that I always knew that the two could work well together, and they had a great feud. That match was a bit of an overkill, but I had a feeling we were going to get a good match this week. So in the climax, Don Callis complains and tries to get on the mic, but Mox grabs him. The mic falls into the ring, rolls to Omega. As Mox turns, he is blasted in the face by the mic from Omega. While the ref was distracted, Mox is down, and he is busted open and bleeding. Omega's recovered now and is pulling his knee pad down, exposing his knee. Hits the V-trigger, follows up with a second V-trigger, and a third while Mox was on the ropes. And a fourth one. So four V-triggers.
Hits vicious the one-winged angel. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, hits the one-winged angel. We get the three count, and Kenneth Aloysius Omega is your new AEW World Champion. And then him and Mox run off. And Tony Khan on camera. Does that happen a lot?
I think we've only seen Tony a handful of times when they go backstage.
Okay. What a goober. Eddie Kingston picks up a headset. He says, screw next week. He wants Lance Archer now.
Yeah.
Moxley is bloody looking in the ring and confused. Well, he always looks confused. And Jim Ross thanks us for joining them, and the show is over. Could this episode get a million?
Or is it, Scotty? Because you left out the most important little tidbit we got there.
And what was that?
Yes, yeah. when they're running out of the arena, like thieves in the night, Steve Willie. There's only one man who can get to the bottom of this, and that, of course, is ace reporter Alex Marvez. And Marvez catches up to them outside of the car, and he's like, what's going on? What? Why did you do this? And Callis says, we'll let everybody know why we did this next Tuesday. And again, being the ace reporter that he is, Scotty, Marvez is like, Dynamite doesn't air on Tuesdays. We air on Wednesdays. And Callis is like, yes. I'll tell everybody why we did this next Tuesday on Access TV on Impact Wrestling.
Really?
He didn't say AEW Dark, though.
That would have been the bigger swerve, Steve Willie. Yeah. You'll find out next Tuesday on YouTube.
So, all right. So we get a great episode of AEW Dynamite. So now here's the ultimate question, and then we'll move on to the next topic. So AEW is working with Impact. AEW, I guess, is working with NWA. Why does AEW need the help? That's the question we have here. I mean, Impact, is Impact need the help? NWA clearly needs the help. But that's a different argument altogether. So the question is, does AEW need the help? Why are they merging with other promotions? I don't understand. Like, I feel like AEW, I mean, is this just for this feud? Was there not enough guys on the AEW roster to help Kenny win? Why did the Bucks come out? You know, why didn't Hangman Page come out? Not to help Kenny or whatever, but there's plenty of guys on the roster. Why do we need, like, why are we having this Impact incursion? I'm a little perplexed, Nate.
I think I wouldn't go as far as to say they need the help. I do think the help is nice, though, because it's something like I'd heard like rumblings that they were going to have some type of working relationship, but I didn't know that it was going to be this in depth. Okay. You know, because Callis showed up. I want to say Callis showed up a couple weeks ago on Dynamite
at the pay-per-view.
At the pay-per-view. That's when it was. Yeah. Again, kind of in the role as Kenny's personal announcer and friend. So when he showed up last night, I was like, okay, they're doing the same gimmick. I had no idea that we were going to end up with this swerve here, this Jacksonville screw job, if you will, Scotty. I think that it, if this is something that is more than just a one-time deal, that's my big caveat. Like, if this is just a one-off, like, yeah, you really don't need Impact and vice versa. But if this is a long-term deal, I think it's something that could actually help both companies and maybe help, like, other companies. Like, because AEW's shown that they've been willing to work with people from time to time. So this could end up being a good deal for everybody involved.
What do you think, Steve?
I think it's an interesting question because I do think it helps Impact. I mean, Impact's a show that their ratings are so low that they don't even make the Nielsen charts. True. So, you know, there's obviously going to be a bunch of people tuning in to Impact who haven't otherwise this week. So from that standpoint, yeah, it definitely helps Impact. And it's going to be a big wait and see, you know, which is part of what drives my interest, and I'm sure others' interest, is that we don't know what the agreement is going to be, so that, you know, then we can all talk about it, then we can all get excited and tune in to find out. So it's almost too early to tell. It's, you know, the very definition of a cliffhanger. So I don't know. Like we had talked about earlier, is it going to be that, hey, they're going to do a lot of women's matches? Are they going to really cross over and have, you know, like the Young Bucks and FTR and some of the Impact guys, like the North, were like, ooh, look what we can do. Like, the Young Bucks posted a shot with them as Generation Me, and FTR posted a picture of them against, you know, the North, and like, ooh, maybe we could do some of these matches. So yeah, it is this ability to build up some talk. I don't think AEW needs them, but I do think that it's an interesting way to get people to tune in, the more hardcore fans. Yeah, and it's like, you know, I want to talk real quick too about like the pros and cons of what they did with this, the end of this match, because I did think it was smart to build off of what you said, Nate. You know, Don Callis was at the pay-per-view for the big Omega Hangman Page match, so it's obvious now, looking back, that that's what they were building to. They were setting that up, so it's not a surprise that Don Callis is all of a sudden there. Because after that pay-per-view, people were like, oh, that's kind of cool that they're, you know, the Impact EVP, you know, was like, hey, we're open to working with other people. This is, you know, just a minor thing. Of course, they're really good friends. So I thought that was a big deal because then it set up like, oh, it's not a surprise that Don Callis is getting involved. What I didn't like about this angle was that the setup to it in the match was that Moxley kind of gave him like a modified paradigm chip into these heaters that were at ringside. It was like a, almost if you have like a stereo speaker in a box, like in the back of your car, that's what it was. It was like these two heaters there. And so it was just like, you know, kind of an evil move, I guess you would say. And everyone came out and back, you know, are they going to stop the match? Kenny's out of it. Moxley threw the refs out of the way, put him in the ring. And then they're like trying to come across as like after Omega took the microphone and hit Ambrose with it, the announcer are trying to say, like, but they had a gentleman's agreement not to do this kind of stuff. Like, Moxley just tried to kill him, like, and end the match. And was throwing refs around. And, like, Omega had, like it's a microphone shot. Like,
to be fair, Steve, we don't know if there was a heater clause in the gentleman's agreement.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they didn't have the weather forecast that far in advance. So then Kenny wins. And it was fine. Like, they could have done that whole thing, and it would have been fine, right? Like, so Kenny cheated to win. He had the help of his friend Don Callis. Okay. But then they're trying to get across as, like, Kenny screwed AEW. Like, what? That's not a screw job finish. Like, that. There's how many matches, not just in AEW, but wrestling, period, is there outside interference in a title match? Is there weapons get involved? Like, pretty much literally every week on every show. So that kind of surprised me that, like, all of a sudden at the end of the match, that's what they're trying to get across as they're running out of time. And then, you know, they go back. And the Tony Khan thing, like, didn't bother me because he was just kind of standing there like, what just happened? But then there's, like, 15 people lined up backstage, like, and then they run, like, if they just got,
I think one of them actually said, like, I don't remember who it was, Steve, I think somebody actually uttered the phrase, we believed in you, Kenny.
Yes, yes. So, like, Like, basically, all it is would be at that point, like, oh, that's where Don Callis helped out his friend Kenny Omega.
Right.
Like, they are friends. They've well established that, you know, that was it Kenny's uncle trained Don Callis. They're both from Winnipeg. Long history. Went over it all in New Japan. And then, so if they didn't do any of that and they just kind of left together and you're like, why did Don Callis do that? And then Don Callis said, I'll tell you on Impact. But the fact that like Jim Ross and Tony's like, hey, screwed AEW. No, they didn't. It was just that Kenny Omega figured out a way to beat Moxley, who, you know, was actually more of the heel in the match than Omega was. So that's like the part that bothered me. I liked the story itself. It was just the way that they handled
right.
it. That makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest detriment. The biggest flaw in the logic, Scotty, was the way that they got to it. But I mean, the truth of the matter is nobody's going to remember how they got there 2 weeks from now or a month from now. They're just going to remember that we got there. Mm-hmm. And so, like, this whole Impact thing is really interesting. And another kind of benefit to AEW, if this is something that is longer than just this one storyline, is Tony Khan, I think it was either this week or last week, was talking to the media and was like, you know, if not for the pandemic, there's probably a lot of people that we have under contract for Dark that wouldn't be here because it just doesn't make sense to keep 30 people on the payroll just to work this YouTube show. So be like 15 of those people that are on Dark can maybe go work at Impact, and it gives them a place to work. And it also gives Impact like a fresh injection of this other talent that they might not have had access to.
And it's another place for Moxley to go work for when he quits AEW because he's being pushed down the card, because he can only be world champion and nothing else. And if he loses, then he's dissatisfied with his creative performance and will quit and go somewhere else. So maybe Impact's next for him because AEW had to take the belt off him, and that's disrespect. And I should be the greatest thing ever of all time, ever of all time, of all time.
Real quick, let me throw a conspiracy theory out there for you.
Good. Yes. I love this. Yeah.
So Impact, I think it's been reported, Impact is working on a relationship with New Japan.
Okay.
Now, we all remember school math in school, the transitive property.
Yep.
So if AEW has a relationship with Impact, will that mean that somewhere down the line, AEW can have a relationship with New Japan, particularly since they have a new president now?
Perhaps. Is the goal like every other promotion to work for AEW and go and like full sail start like the original, the Nexus did? They'll break into NXT and start breaking the glass and ripping the stuff apart. You know, I don't know. That'd be kind of crazy, right? I don't know.
I kind of like it because it's like not to bring up these three letters again, Scotty, but it kind of reminds me of watching the NWA when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And you get this footage of Ric Flair like wrestling in all these other little promotions.
Right. Yeah.
And it get like 1 week he'd show up in World Class. The next week he's in Florida. Then he's up in the Midwest somewhere. And it gives you the illusion as a fan that the company that you're watching is bigger than just the 2 hours you watch on TV every week. And so if we've got Kenny, who's now got a relationship with Impact, who may or may not have a relationship with New Japan, who has a relationship with AAA. Like, there's some interesting things they could play around with here.
And I would love to see Su Yung beat the shit out of Hikaru Shida.
Wow.
That would be awesome.
Oh, we could have a Su Yung Abaddon team up.
Oh, and then, like, have Britt Baker get pummeled by Deonna Purrazzo. Oh,
yes.
Yeah, I love that. You know what? Your guys are making me smile. I'm enjoying this. Making me smile.
Yeah, there's some interesting, like Jordan Grace versus Big Swole. Like I'd watch that right now.
Yeah, I would definitely watch that right now. Yeah. What about Su Yung and Rich Swann against Cody and Brandy in a husband wife match? You know, Brandy could be drunk. Rich Swann could throw frying pans. It'd be amazing.
Oh, jeez.
And we haven't even talked about the big money match out there, gentlemen, between AEW and Impact. Ken Shamrock versus Shaquille O'Neal. Like, it's going to happen.
I thought you were going to say Sting. I'm like, I thought we did see that. Maybe not.
The Diesel versus the world's most dangerous man.
World's most dangerous man. All right. Okay, so let's hop on, because we've had a good, we've been going a little while about it. That's the most AEW talk we've had in a while, guys. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it was a fun night.
It was a fun night. But time to go to the other side of the hallway, the other side of the camp, and talk about Sunday at the Capitol Wrestling Center, well, the Performance Center with their fancy name. NXT TakeOver War Games, which will be Sunday night on the WWE Network. There are five matches, of course, the two War Games, two singles matches, and our lone title match of the evening, which, of course, Brother Nathaniel mentioned at the top of the program. In fact, let's talk about that one first. A triple threat match for the NXT North American Championship. Leon Ruff. Good old Leon. He's trying to find his way in the world, Brother Nate. taking on the two former champions, Johnny G and Damian Priest. I think this match is going to be surprisingly good. I think Leon Ruff escapes. I really do, Nate.
I think this will be an interesting match because I love the Leon Ruff character. Like he's like a Black Rudy. Like he's 5 foot nothing, 100 and nothing. Like he has no business in this ring, but. It's hard to root against him, and especially like here in the news, he got engaged this week, which is really cool. But I think this is going to be Damian Priest night. I think Priest wins because like there's a part of me that feels like the only reason we got Leon Ruff is so Priest wouldn't have to go over Gargano, and they can save that match for later.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Priest wins, and then that sets up Gargano Priest. On one down the road.
Okay. What do you think, Steve?
I wonder why Gargano has to be involved in every single title feud ever in NXT at this point. It's like, you know, I almost find something else to do with him, I guess. I'm going to say Leon Ruff kind of holds on to it. I'm not used to these titles flip-flopping all around.
True.
So, yeah, like... Maybe have a rematch, have one-on-one. You know, he can have one-on-one matches with each of these guys. And in a triple threat match, he can continue to pull off that Rudy story, like, you know, get that quick pin off of somebody.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. All right. So two Leon Ruffs and a Damian Priest. Sorry, Johnny. I'm looking forward to this match. This match will be a lot of fun. A strap match between one of my favorite indie guys, Dexter Lumis, the former, well, not former, his real name is Samuel Shaw, but I enjoyed Samuel Shaw in Tried and True and some other his other promotions, against Cameron Grimes. A strap match. Love strap matches. I like Dexter Lumis in this one, Steve.
Yeah, I haven't been watching NXT. I have to admit that. Is Dexter Lumis the face?
Yes, I think so.
Wow. Okay. Because I went to a house show earlier this year before, there's such a pandemic or something. I don't know. And yeah, he was like this massively evil heel, like frighteningly scary type heel, kind of like he was in Impact. So when I saw this feud starting, I'm like, this, you know, because Cameron Grimes, obviously a heel, like, what is going on with this feud? Why is this existing? So yeah, if Lumis is a face, I think he wins, but. Man, I'm really high on Cameron Grimes. I wondered how he was going to fit into NXT, like, and what kind of character he was going to get, and they found something to fit him that fits him really well. He's a lot of fun, so yeah, this could be a nice violent match.
What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, and I wouldn't say Lumis the babyface so much as he's not Cameron Grimes. Like, there's a difference there. But I do think good old Sam Shaw. You know, he may not have been able to win Christy Hemme's heart, Steve Willie.
Yeah.
But he's going to be able to win this strap match.
Okay. I'm enjoying it. I'm gonna enjoy that one. I think that one's going to be very violent. I am so pumped about this one. Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa, as I used to call him when I had no idea who the fuck he was. Tommaso Ciampa. Ciampa's another one, kind of like, to a lesser extent, like Johnny. Like, what do you do with him at this point? There's nowhere to fit him on the main roster, and no one wants to see him start jobbing out to guys. So this is just a safe place for him to be right now, my opinion. I think it's the same way with Johnny. But this one's going to be a lot of fun, and I like Timothy Thatcher because I think he's going to be the next North American champion. That's why I like Leon Ruff to win the match there, because I think Timothy Thatcher is going to beat poor Leon into submission. But I like Timothy Thatcher, Nate.
I think this will be a fun match, but I'm going to go Ciampa because I do feel like he's in this weird position. Like, they obviously don't have plans for him in the main event scene, not at this moment, but he's also like the guy that he's like a bank, Steve. He's too big to fail. And so I feel like it'll be a good match. I could see Thatcher winning, but if I had to put money down, I'll put it on Ciampa.
Okay. Steve, what do you think?
I'm sticking with Nate on this one. I'm going to say Ciampa as well. I'm really looking forward to this match. It was a surprise to me when Thatcher got signed, and it was even a bigger surprise to me that he immediately had relevancy, you know, taking Dunn's place as a tag with Riddle and then having a feud there and having that really good match with Finn Balor and, you know, now moving on to this, like, just getting signed and then getting right on the roster and right on the main shows. So, looking forward to this one and picking Ciampa. This looks like a really good card.
It does, because we're about to talk about our two main event matches. Let's do the men first, because this match is weird. we have the Undisputed Era, who are the Four Horsemen, and they have been pretty much the anchors of NXT. These four guys deserve a fuck ton of credit for putting NXT on their back over the last couple of years. Adam, Kyle, Roddy, and the Fishman. And they will be taking on Oney Lorcan, Danny Burch, our tag team champions, Pete Dunne, and Peyton Manning. I'm sorry, John. No, Mike Vanderjack. No, that's not it. Who's the
Rudy guy?
Kevin Butler. Yeah, Ray guy. No, Reggie Roby. No, Sean Landetta. No, damn it. I don't remember which punter is it? I don't even have a clue. Mike Weatherford. I don't know.
It's a podcaster.
No. Yeah, some guy. I'm a little nervous as to, I mean, I know Pat McAfee's going to want to like show off that hey, I'm a wrestler guy, but is he going to be like JJ Dillon and just get the fucking tar pounded out of him? I see that happening, but I think Lorcan, Burch, and definitely Pete Dunne, who's back on my radar, is going to really carry them. But I think UE is going to beat the shit out of Pat McAfee in this match. They should anyway. I think they should pummel him like JJ Dillon, and he's going to one that's going to tap out, and the UE wins this match. Nate,
Pat McAfee. I grew up watching JJ Dillon. J.J. Dillon, you could say, was a friend of mine. Pat McAfee, you're no J.J. Dillon.
That's right. Get your ass.
Like, great promo aside, because I do think McAfee cut a good promo on NXT last night. But, yeah, he's going to be there just to fill that J.J. Dillon role. He's going to, you know, take a bunch of abuse. You know, he might get a nice little spot here or there. But ultimately, I think I'll have to go with the Undisputed Era in this one.
Now, they wrestled last year against Ciampa, Keith Lee, Jai Kovich. And then remember, Kevin Owens came out in his original music and he had his original t-shirt, yeah, which I own. But they lost, of course, Ciampi won. But at the time, they were still heels and Cole was the champion. What do you think, Steve?
It's War Games. It's the faces, and the Undisputed Era have been in every single War Games match. Even the women, Steve. Yeah, all of them. God, I'm so on my game tonight. They've been in every single. I believe in a little bit of a mess if I am. I think I'm such a huge fan of Lorcan and Burch too, so I am excited about this match. So here's the spot. It's going to be McAfee doing like a moonsault off the top of the cage to everyone. Remember, he did that in his match against Adam Cole. He did that. Yeah. So yeah. That's going to be your spot. Maybe he'll do a little half flip with it. And that will be the attempt to get on SportsCenter or something like that. But yeah, Undisputed Era will win. Hopefully McAfee gets killed. He's like the poor man's Gronk. But they probably wanted Gronk to be.
So he's Kyle Rudolph then.
Exactly. Yeah. Where's Tyler Eifert? There should be a whole team of tight ends. All right. The match I'm next to Thatcher and Ciampa, the match I'm most looking forward to is, of course, the women. This year's women's War Games match, we have Team Candace. Candace, Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez, and the now heel Toni Storm. Against Team Shotzi Blackheart, Ember Moon, Rhea Ripley, and Io Shirai. Oh my God. I may have to put the premium on this. Oh boy. We might have to change the rating of this podcast if we talk about the four of them on one team. Hachi Machi. Now, here was last year's women's match, women's War Games match. Last year's was Rhea, Candace, they were on the same team because Candace was a face at the time, Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai, who also was a, although that happened at the beginning, there's with a heel turn. So we're a year into Dakota Kai's heel turn against Team Shayna. Don't forget Shayna, Bianca Belair, who was a heel, Io, who was a heel, and Kaylee Ray. That match was awesome. Awesome. As a matter of fact, it was on my top 100 GWWE match list. That's how much I love that women's match. I don't know if it's going to reach the level. I don't know if Sunday's match will reach the levels of that one, although all the workers in this match are amazing. And now we've got a little experience in there with Ember and Rhea and Tony. I think this match will be a lot of fun. Something tells me Team Candace is going to sneak it out at the end. I know you said, Steve, that babyfaces win War Games matches. I don't see it here. Love Shotzi to death. And I love that team, more ways than one. But something tells me Team Annoying Candace, Team Less Annoying Candace, because she's not as bad as a heel as she is as a face, sneaks out with the win here.
Yeah, I'll stick with the faces just because that's what I always go with.
But good old Babyface Willie.
Babyface Willie.
Which then means I think I picked the baby face for every single match.
Yes. What do you think this is, WrestleMania? What are you, what is this, 1988?
I'm such a blue eye.
You are.
Man, looking at this match, again, not watching NXT much. What the hell happened for this face team? And Toni Storm's a heel. I gotta at some point catch up on NXT because I know Dakota Kai and Raquel are together. I knew Candace turned heel, but like Io's face, like Ember Moon is there.
Happening? Ember Moon came back at the last show was Takeover, whatever 31. Yeah.
37 and a half.
Yeah, Takeover 31, she came back. Her and Toni Storm, I think they came back together. Yeah, they came back together that night.
And now they're bitter rivals. Rivals to the end.
Yes, rivals
the last after 8 weeks or something.
Yes, exactly. Yep. All right. What do you think, Nate? Are you gonna buck the trend with me or are you gonna sit in the Gorilla Monsoon David Crockett camp of faces win War Games matches?
Well, here's the thing, Scotty, and I'm glad you brought up last year's War Games match because that to me was the NXT match of the year. Like, it might have even been my WWE match of the year. I remember that night we did the show with the other Cracker Barrel gang, and
yes,
I like that match even more so than the men's match. So, like, I don't think this match has any chance of reaching that level just because I think for the War Games match to really go beyond just a great match and hit that next level of like the best match of the night, maybe one of the best matches of the year, you need that personal story at the center of it. And we had that with Rhea and Shayna. Whereas it does feel like a lot of these pieces that are in this match just kind of coalesced over the last couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I think it's going to be a good match. It might even end up being the best match of this show. But I don't think it's going to reach the levels of last year. I do like all the talent involved, but I think I'm going to lean towards the heel team, and not just because of like my rebound after Nia Jax breaks my heart, Steve Willey, is going to be Raquel Gonzalez. But because I do think there's more opportunity for storytelling there. If you have Candice, like the ego monster that is Candice LeRae can only be enhanced by this win. And so then the story becomes who's going to take her down. And so, yeah, I think like Shotzi, Ember, Rhea, and Io, like they can absorb a loss in a hard fought match and you can still tell a story off of that. So I will go against good old babyface Willie and go for Team Candice LeRae, Scott.
Okay. All right. Good. Bucking the trend. It's sad though, because I mean that Team Shotzi match, that team.
Oh,
okay. A little warm in here.
I do want to say that it's okay that you guys pick the heels, and I still care about you both, and I'm more than happy to have you on my side on Team Babyface.
Always will be in our world.
I'm very supportive. I'm just here for the fans. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So there's your NXT TakeOver War Games preview. And again, guys, I love how our schedule lays out, because when we're back in 2 weeks, we get another preview. We will preview the final WWE/NXT show of 2020, TLC. So we'll do that in 2 weeks. Before we go to our plug interlude, and then we'll do our GWCW match, we won't get into some of the other stuff. There's not much going on in New Japan at the moment. We pretty much talked Impact during Dynamite, so not much going on there at the moment. Their show, I think, is a week after next, whatever it is, Final Resolution. I know, Steve, you hate that title. Most people do. so long as they don't call it Ultimate. Well, WCW already offended us with Ultimate Solution.
Yes.
So, yeah, that already happened. So, so we'll before we get to the interlude, then we'll talk some GWCW. So, for those that don't know, this past week was episode 12 of UWN Primetime Live, and we won't get into it here. The Doctor and I will go into it in detail on this weekend's Saturday special. But it's announced that they're taking the rest of the year off and they're going to come back in January. But NWA debuted this new show on YouTube this past week called Shockwave. And of course the Doctor and I were incredibly pumped. It was nice to have some NWA content again. Then we find out
some new fresh content, Scotty.
Yeah. New fresh fucking content that I paid for. They took the NWA matches off of the UWN shows. So you guys, who, I don't know if you paid for it, you probably didn't, you're probably smart, you guys got to watch Aldis and Bennett, who Mike Bennett's now in ROH, so I don't know what the fuck's going on. What the heck was the other? And there were two other matches, NWA matches, from the beginning. Oh, shit.
Crap.
Two other early NWA matches from earlier.
Yeah,
the Thunder. No, that's this week.
Okay.
This week is Thunder Rosa and Priscilla Kelly, which if you guys didn't watch it on, please watch that match. It's and you heard you guys, I mentioned it on this show, too. That match was awesome. Just to let you know. But, I mean, I don't know what Billy's problem is. He's on Howard Stern talking about his goofy album and even and I love Nick Aldis, but he's like, you know, he's kind of like all in limbo and. I don't know what the fucking problem is, but I understand the whole thing that happened with Dave, and I understand the whole thing that happened with COVID, but everybody else kind of survived, and what is his, what are there, I don't know what the fuck the problem is. Something's wrong. I don't know what the problem is, but they wasted months, and I spent $75 for 12 episodes of a bunch of indie people. Some of them I like. I love Alex Hammerstone, and I like Danny Limelight, but the women in that, the women's matches are crap. And their promos are garbage. They need to go to the Performance Center to learn how to cut promos because they suck. And now, all I wanted to watch was NWA, and had I waited 11 fucking weeks, I could have gotten those matches now for free! Steve, I need therapy. What the fuck?
Yeah, that sucks.
That sucks, doofus.
Yeah, well, that's true. I am agreeing with you. I'm validating your concerns. I am normalizing your concerns.
Kenny Omega needs to fix my fucking Impact Plus too now. All right, Kenny, I'm rooting for you as champion. Now you and Callis fix my fucking subscription.
Maybe that's why Kenny, you know, Kenny's the video game expert.
Exactly. Maybe he's going to work on Impact's IT.
Maybe that's what he's going to do. He's going to come
over. That's the big announcement. That's the big announcement. The reason I came to Impact is because your streaming platform needs my help.
It needs my help. I need to clean it. What do you think of this NWA situation, Nate?
It's a slap in the face to the people that actually shelled out the money for this. Especially in the midst of a pandemic, like it's hard enough for people to like get excited about content, but like you made this big deal and you know, you put these shows together and you got folks to pay for it. And then you turn around a couple months later and it's free. And so like, I think, like there's something's up with the NWA, and obviously, like you are more tuned in to what's been going on with them than I am, Scotty. But just from the outside looking in, it feels like, I don't want to go as far as to say that Billy's giving up, but it's certainly not the foremost thing at the front of his mind right now.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Like it. Even with something like MLW, like MLW's not nearly on the stage of where Impact or certainly not AEW or even the NWA, you know, you could say, like, but MLW through this whole pandemic, like Court Bauer and Alex Greenfield and people involved with the promotion, like they've been tweeting and shooting videos, and you could tell there's an excitement about, you know, we're not where we want to be because of the pandemic, but we're still here and we're going to get things done. And I don't feel any of that energy coming from the NWA. So like I feel like the next couple months are going to be kind of telling, Scotty, because there's something to the brand of the NWA, but if that's all it is a brand and a YouTube channel, then you might as well just let these people go and make their money and do their craft on other stages.
Yeah. And I wanted to be invested so much. I mean, we had a Crockett Cup pay-per-view, and the pandemic fucked that up, and then the whole Dave thing, Lagana thing, which we still don't know whether that's true or false, but we haven't heard anything from Dave in months, or from whatever the hell her name is, Liz, what's her face? I don't remember her name. About that.
Well, I think that's the other thing too, Scotty. Like, I don't think, and this is not like me coming out here to heap praise on Dave Lagana, because like you said, we don't know if the allegations are true or not, but I feel like once Lagana's out of the picture, that puts more on Billy's plate, and I don't know if Billy's the guy that you want at the head of the table to do the day-to-day stuff.
You want Roman Reigns at the head of the table.
Yes, like Roman Reigns should buy the NWA and he'll get it up and running.
That would be amazing. Oh god, and have Haku back, have the whole Samoan family. Oh my god, that would be the greatest thing ever. Oh my god. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate your letting me rant like that. I meant that, and your opinions are greatly valued, of course, because this show is fucking great. But you'll get more NWA rants, because most certainly I will continue my anger, and then you will hear from the doctor this weekend on the NWA Saturday special, and we'll definitely, the ripcord will definitely be pulled this weekend. So, before we dive into my delicious GWCW choices, let's plug all of the wonderful content that everyone in this room does all over the information superhighway. For those that didn't listen, by the way, and I want to pump it because I haven't talked about it. This is the first show we've had since we did it. Take a listen to the most recent episode of the Chain Reaction Pod. Nate, you, me, and our friend Mr. Chittenden had a tremendous show recapping Survivor Series. I thought it was a lot of fun. So of course in concert with the Kings of Sport Patreon and the Place to Be Wrestling Network. So check it on either. It was a lot of fun. I just want to let you know that. I always have fun when we do that show, and I love Brent to death. Try to get him on this show. We should try to get him on. I like Brent. Speaking of the Kings of Sport Patreon, Brother Nate, what do we got going on over there?
Yes, there's a lot going on right now, Scotty, on the Patreon. In addition to that episode of the Chain Reaction that you mentioned, the Hamilton Live Watch is available for the subscribers. We also put it out for free on Thanksgiving as a holiday gift for the people. Myself, Brittany Monet, and Vanessa Shark, Steve Willie's favorite, watching Hamilton. And then that's 3 hours of singing and ridiculous jokes. And that's really fun. We got a new episode of the Kings of Sport that should be out sometime this weekend where, you know, I teased it earlier, Steve Willie, when you mentioned that man Taz from Red Hook. One of the topics we ended up on this week on the Kings of Sport, we made a Mount Rushmore. The cultural appropriation in Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, like the four figures that best signify that. And the reason we got on that topic is because I was doing like a bad Al Pacino in Carlito's Way impression. And halfway through, I'm like, we couldn't make those movies like Scarface and Carlito's Way now because you couldn't have this Italian dude playing these Cuban characters. Like people wouldn't go for that. And that led us down the path of talking about Scott Hall. And then we were like, who else in wrestling was some of the great white people that played other races? And so I'm not going to give you the full list. I'm going to give you a couple because then you got to pay for the other two or just wait for the episode to drop on the free feed. Your call. But the two that immediately came to mind were Taz, who a lot of people thought was either black or Puerto Rican. And it's like, no, he's just some muscle-bound Italian dude with a deep tan. That's good old Peter Sinercha. And then, of course, maybe the greatest cultural appropriator in the history of pro wrestling, Steve, a man who to this day people think is African-American, Johnny B. Badd.
Yep.
the greatest cultural appropriator in the history of wrestling. And then, like, he was so good that black people didn't even care that he was this Jewish-Italian guy playing Little Richard. We love Johnny B. Badd. And so, like, we've got two more people on the list, but you can check that out on the Kings of Sport. You know, patreon.com/Kings of Sport. We've also got something coming up later this month where we're going to do the 12 casts of Christmas, which is Marcus and I's pick for the best 12 shows that we've done this year. We're going to drop one every day on the Patreon leading up to Christmas. And yeah, so we got some good things in store for this last month of this darkest year, Steve Willie.
Ah, yes. March 206th.
That's true. Oh, God. Anyway, that's awesome, Nate. Good stuff all around. Please join the Kingsport Patreon. $5 gets you in the door. But how do you say it, Steve? But if you want to sit up in the table with Steve Willie and get free counseling on your shitty Impact Plus subscription, a little more. The pool's got to be deeper to wet the beak.
Yeah, Steve Willie's at the head of the table, you know.
That's true. He is the chief. Steve Willie is the chief of the tribe.
Chief Babyface.
Chief Blue Eyes. Anyway, Kings of Sport Patreon is fantastic. I am a sponsor. Steve is. It's fantastic. So check it out. Great content all around. As for over here on this side of the quad, the Place to Be Wrestling Network feed, we got a bunch of great stuff, guys. Earlier this week, episode 564 of the Place to Be podcast, JR and myself were joined by Greg Diener from It Was a Thing on TV over on the Pop feed. We looked at the July 1st, 1991 Madison Square Garden house show. So check that out.
Oh, real quick, Scotty. I know you were probably going to do this at some point in the show, but shout out to your boy JR on his birthday, man.
Yes, happy 40th to my
boy. He's a man. He's 40.
He's 40. He's in the same decade as me now. Thank God.
Never gets old.
For a few more years.
Never gets old.
Never gets old.
Like he's the Mike Gundy of the crew now.
That's right. Yeah. So yes, happy birthday to my PIC, and I'll because obviously him and I will not be recording this week, and his birthday is actually Monday. So it's weird. He got his birthday off. We've recorded on my birthday a few times, but happy birthday, of course, to my PIC, who will be the big 4-0. But anyway, him and I were on this past. We did our past episode. Greg Diener from It Was a Thing on TV. The July 1st, 1991 MSG House Show. Speaking of anniversaries and birthdays, the boys from across the pond did their 13th episode of the Special Relations Podcast, Rory McNamara, Callum McDougall, and Ben Locke, and it was their one-year anniversary. They actually got through a year without bailing. Clearly Stephen Graham does not host that show. So check that out, the newest edition of the episode of the Special Relations Pod. Talked about the NWA Saturday Special. Every Saturday morning, myself and the doctor, we did episode 11 of UWM Primetime Live and a big announcement on the NWA's new YouTube show. Yeah, wait till this weekend. The tone's going to be very, very different. So check it out. Back on the highway to the Impact Zone, Logan and the guys tackle the 12th episode of Impact in the weekly pay-per-view number 109. And on the newest You Don't Know Billy Jack, Drew and Jordan go back to 2011, for the game-changing match between John Cena and CM Punk at Money in the Bank. So all the great stuff here on the PTB Wrestling Network. Don't forget to check out our network store. Get some merch for the holidays. Get Brother Nate a Jenny and the Gems hoodie. Go to tpublic.com. Type PTBW in the search. Don't buy that bootleg Steve Willie stuff. Very weird. Mm-hmm. Captain Babyface and like his head's crooked. It's very weird. It's like Chicago Bears Super Bowl champion post 1985. You know what I mean? Yeah. Rex Grossman Super Bowl MVP T-shirt, right, Steve?
Oh, yes, wait. Exactly.
Sorry. Never mind. So anyway, go to the store. Great stuff. And of course, rate, review, and subscribe our pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Just search Place to Be Wrestling Network. While you're at it, the other pods here in the quad, the Place to Be Pop Feed, all the great shows on there. And of course, the other two great feeds, the Jenny Position, Jennifer Smith, and all those great shows. New Journey Through Infinity will be dropping, if it has not dropped already. I believe it has dropped already. And of course, the No-So, the North-South Connection, by the birthday boy, Mr. Azzaro, along with Chad and Aaron. Great stuff on there as well. Go to the Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. Go to Place to Be on Facebook. Type it in the search and request an invite. We have a lot of fun. We're doing 31 questions in 31 days in December. We're going to mix up wrestling questions with Christmas questions. Today's question that we posted was eggnog. Thumbs up, thumbs down. And if yes, do you spike it? Believe it or not, I don't. I like my liquor separate. I don't want it in my eggnog. I like eggnog, but I want my liquor separate. You know what? I'll use an eggnog chaser is what I'll do. There you go. I'll do a shot and then I'll guzzle the eggnog. I don't like it in my liquor. I don't like it in my eggnog though. It gets me. Anyway, so great questions like that on the Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. So check it out. Speaking of GWCW, you've got a whopping, if you're listening to this the day it drops, you've got 26 days left. Get your list ready. Drop it. And then next year, guys, we're going to have a lot of fun next year here on the main event where we'll talk about ballots and matches. We're going to have a lot of fun breaking down the GWCW match list. But go to facebook.com/GWCW matches or the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Go to placebination.com. New voices, fresh takes, great columns. Trent's SmackDown on Fox report. This Week in the WWE by John Crow, which I keep saying a zillion times, guys. We got to get John on the show. He's amazing. Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, Matt's Disney Live Action Journey, and much, much more. And, of course, it's time, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. So go to placebination.com/Amazon, buy all your stuff, and we get a little beak wetter to keep the lights on. Don't forget to check out longtime listener Adrian Cotton's second book, AWO Big Time Players, Episode 2, Continuing to Grow. It's a vivid description of the second episode of the Alpha Wrestling Organization's program, Big Time Players, and it's available as an ebook and paperback. And you can get both episodes in paperback for less than $16. So check that out. By the way, guys, before we continue, I got from my little secret Santa, I got the new Nitro book. Have you guys seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this new Nitro book out, Nate. You got to get it. I haven't read it yet. I literally got it just yesterday. From a secret Santa that I'm in. And, I'm looking forward to reading it. I didn't see the author, but it's about the rise. And it's another book like Brian Alvarez's, you know, like the one he did many years ago. It's pretty much about the rise and fall of WCW. So it's right in guys. It's like right in our wheelhouse. So, check it out. So if you have, get it for Nate Milton come on, Papa Marcus, get your boy a gift. You could sign from Baby Simba. Because it probably has bigger payroll on Instagram.
There are so many gift ideas on this episode, Scotty. The Nitro book, Sting merchandise.
Exactly, like, yeah.
PTB your work's merch. Done. Yes.
Exactly. PTB merch. Steve Willie coaster. Steve Willie coasters.
Yes. Yeah, so that way when I've had one too many drinks, I can look down at the table and see Steve Willie and like, you know what? I really don't need this extra beer.
I will handle things the proper way. So anyway.
Right now what you're doing, Nate, is called coping.
Yes. Oh God. All right. So all the great feeds, all the great stuff, and all the great pods all over Superhighway. So enjoy. Okay. It is now time for this week's we only got two left, guys. So our next episode will be the last, and it works out because it usually goes Steve, me, Nate. So Nathaniel, in 2 weeks, when you have the shoe, You will close out the GWCW. So, very cool. But this week, guys, I have the shoe. And I decided, because I recorded one of our other shows here on the PTB Wrestling Network, talk a little bit about one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, another one that is no longer with us, sadly. But not his awesome the show that I did was about his early WWF stuff, 84-85, which is fucking amazing. But this I did picks, guys, early Crockett and late, I guess, Crockett-ish. My two matches, guys, I picked tonight are about the great Roderick Toombs, otherwise known as, of course, Rowdy Roddy Piper. And I was going to pick one match I guaranteed I was going to pick, and we'll talk about that one first. The second match I added later because I originally had another match, but I kind of wanted to talk about this other match because it's one I hadn't watched in quite a long time, and I'm kind of excited about watching it again today. So, of course, the first match I'm going to pick is a match that is undoubtedly on my GWCW list. Mm-hmm. Undoubtedly. Doubtedly. It's just a question of where. Probably be in my top 15. Mm-hmm. Or at worst, top 20. We, of course, are going back, gentlemen, to the very first mega card of the modern era. We are, of course, talking about Starrcade 1983. Yes, you know what match I'm talking about. The Hot Rod and the Hammer. Roddy Piper, Greg Valentine, the dog collar match. I remember first watching this match, guys, when I rented the PWI Lords of the Ring tape when I was a kid, which I have in the other room on DVD. I bought it at Chiller Con, or I bought it at a horror convention of all things. This guy had a bunch of bootleg DVDs, and one of them was PWI Lords of the Ring. And I'm with Dr. G, and he looks at me and goes, "This guy's got fucking wrestling DVDs." And I had my like Michael Myers shirt on and shit, and I'm like, "This is fucking weird." So I ended up getting the because I remember renting that tape like crazy when I was a kid. And that match is on it. And I fell in love with that match immediately. Hammer was the United States champion. They were feuding with it throughout 83. The match was not for the title, because I think it was probably known behind the scenes that Piper was going out the door, which surprised me as to why he won this match. But in any event, because by January, because on the January 84 MSG House show, which Hogan, of course, beat the Sheik, Piper was rehabbing an injury, and he was seconding Paul Orndorff to the ring. So literally like 10 weeks later, Piper's in the WWF, which is crazy, right? But on this night in Greensboro, Piper and the Hammer put on a clinic of violence. And this is just classic Crockett for the day. And I love this match. And this match is, again, this is a no-brainer on my ballot, probably in my top 20 at worst. Most likely to be in my top 15. What are your memories of this match, Nate?
See, it'd been a while since I'd watched this match. You know, we talked about it a little bit before the show, Scotty. But going back and watching it today, I was like right back in that mode from the last time I watched it, where I think that, you know, people forget about Roddy's time in the NWA. Like, it's not something that people think about. And I also think, like, when we talk about a second match, like, people want to forget when Roddy showed up in WCW. But like, this is a part of his career that doesn't get a lot of play. So I'm glad you picked this match. And it is one of the most like brutal matches I've ever seen, where like they're not out here trying to play nice, Scotty. Like, there's no Greco-Roman, there's no catch as catch can.
Oh, no.
This isn't Marcus of Queensbury rule. There's no gentleman's agreement, Steve Willie. It's just two dudes, a chain, and some dog collars, and they're beating the hell out of each other. And like it I think it might be the first wrestling match I saw, and maybe to this day one of the few I've seen where a guy bleeds from his ear.
Right.
And like, just the visceral kind of violence and brutality of it. Like, it's this type of match usually isn't my cup of tea, but I thought like this was like all the stuff Scotty was saying about the feud, like this was a fitting way to kind of put a cap on that, where we just got two guys beating the hell out of each other. Like, there's even a point near the end of the match where like you can tell like both guys are exhausted, and normally I think that would lessen my enjoyment of a match, but it fit the story here, where like there's nothing left in the tank, but these guys hate each other so much that they're not, neither one is trying to trying to give in to the other, Steve. And so yeah, it's just a great bloody violent brawl throughout the course of this match.
Absolutely. Yeah, and building up to it, and I think a lot of us didn't see this kind of stuff back in the day because there was no really TV available for the most part. You didn't see, you know, there was, it was the very, very early days of cable. So that wasn't really available to most. So, you know, they talked about this whole feud that built up to this, but I, you know, to this day, I haven't seen any of it. This is the only part I've seen. And, you know, it started with Valentine basically taking Roddy Piper's ear, like deafening him, you know, before then. That was the big gimmick that led to this match. But the thing that got to me after, you know, reading about this a couple of years ago was they went around the horn and did this match everywhere. And, you know, kind of researching this for today, Valentine thinks he did it over 40 times this match. And they were so happy to be done and go to the WWF because they did shortly thereafter because it was so exhausting. And there's this quote I found by Piper that they got mad at each other. Like Valentine got so mad at Piper, not because they were beating the hell out of each other, but quote, because by the 29th match, we both had a rash around our necks from the sheep's wool that looked like herpes.
Yes. But yeah, that feud, I mean, that feud goes back. I mean, they were feuding, geez, in the early 83. I mean, they were feuding probably, remember, they both were in the Port Don Owen in the Portland area. So that feud goes back probably to like 79, 80. So that feud's probably like maybe even further back. I would say probably, I mean, Valentine and Flair were going at it in 77, 78, you know, even with Koloff and all the U.S. title stuff, that stuff goes back in at least 6 years from this match. So the chemistry is just so there. And we don't see it, sadly, in the WWF because they're both obviously heels for a good hunk of their time there. So, and I mean, even here, you could not see, you would not see this this kind of violence in the WWF. And now, having said that, now it's funny I say that, though, because 7 months later in July of 84, was it June of 84, at the Garden, Slaughter and the Iron Sheik would have a boot camp match for all ages in that building. So when they need to, when Vince needs to, you know, sell tickets with some gigging, he would definitely do that. Of course, Piper wins the match, but it was a non-title. And then again, Piper would go on to leave the NWA and head to the WWF. Valentine would end up losing the U.S. title in February of 84 to Dick Slater. And Valentine would end up turning face for a short time in Crockett. Isn't that crazy? And feud a bit. And then by like, I think like by April or May, he follows Piper to New York and he's in the WWF. And then I think by like by August, he wins the Intercontinental title from Tito. So great stuff. Great stuff.
Yeah, and it's really like, because I know like it, a lot of people, when they think of Greg the Hammer Valentine, like maybe they think of the latter part of his career. When like you can tell the years of matches like these have worn on him, but like this is like I don't know if this is peak Greg the Hammer Valentine, but it's certainly a different Greg the Hammer Valentine that we'd see in the WWF.
Yeah, exactly. Steve, what do you think?
In terms of Greg Valentine, I'm sorry, I missed that the last part. Like, I thought, you know, I have great memories. Some of my first wrestling memories are his feud with Tito Santana. But yeah, after that, when you go down to the Rhythm and Blues and it was just like a shin guard gimmick. I did see him a few years ago at some local indie promotion wrestle. That was quite humorous because it was in a tag match and he had his 8.5 by 11 manila folder of 8 by 10s to sign that he was carrying around because he didn't want anyone to steal them. And then he sat on side and eventually got the hot tag, dropped an elbow on a figure four, and got his $150 probably. That's one of my favorite Valentine memories. But yeah, great worker. We never got to see a lot of his stuff either. You know, Piper wrestled for years and years in a high end. You'd occasionally see Valentine show up on Nitro from time to time.
Yeah,
right.
But yeah, like just pretty far down the card after making WWF and doing the Tito feud and then the stuff with Beefcake.
So there's our one match. My second match, now originally, just to let everyone know, originally I was going to add, go back in time. This was going to be the second match we talked about. I was going to talk about, I think it was July 7th of 82, Piper on an episode of Mid-Atlantic TV, Piper defending the Mid-Atlantic title against Jack Briscoe, which is a fantastic match. If you go on the network, find the July 7th, 1982 episode of Mid-Atlantic. Not the Saturday Night Show with David Crockett and Tony, not the good show, but the local show. And that match is amazing. But I wanted to have a different Piper WCW. So I fast forward, as Nate mentioned, we fast forward 13 years to Starrcade 1996 and the big rematch between the two guys that made the WWF in the mid-80s. Piper took on then WCW world champion Hollywood Hulk Hogan, or just Hollywood Hogan, I guess, at the time. You're probably saying to yourself, are you fucking crazy? Well, come on. You know, we have to be open-minded. Somebody may put this at, like, number 72. But, I mean, let's be honest, guys. I watched this match. You guys watched this match. It's, I mean, look, it's not the greatest thing on the planet. But we're not talking, like, Hogan Warrior Halloween Havoc 98. I mean, it's not that bad. but Nate's like, yes, it is. I thought it was a fun little back and forth. I mean, I thought the drama going in, I remember this back then. I remember the drama going in was big. A Piper back, you know, of course, earlier in the year, he was in the WWF, the whole stuff with Goldust. And this was huge when he came back in WCW. And Piper goes, you know, talks about Hogan being a piece of shit and yada, yada. You never pinned me. And well, but, you know, Piper, other than Brett, no one ever pinned you. I picked this match just because I wanted to see a different era of Piper in that environment. And I can't say that I hated the match. Am I going to put it on my list? I don't know. I wanted to just throw it out there as an option for people. What are your thoughts, Nate, on the match and this era of Piper when he came in 96?
It is a match I've seen more than a few times, just because I've gone back and looked at that pay-per-view a couple times, and it's typical WCW where the undercard is actually kind of good. And then we get to the main event, and I get it, Scotty, like you're right. Back then, like, this was a match that had interest. Like, there was a lot of nostalgia for it. And I think had they handled it in a different way, you actually could have had a pretty good match. And right. You know, if you eliminated all the NWO stuff, like if this match isn't the main event, like if it was the co-main or maybe, you know, the third match from the end, I think it could have been much better received. But given who was in this match, and I'm not talking about Roddy Piper, but given the other participant, you knew it had to go last. And I think the match suffers from that. Like, it's not like this shouldn't have been the main event of this show, Scotty. Like, it's a special attraction match. There's some history behind it. Like, Roddy, for what he was at that time, I feel like Roddy didn't embarrass himself. But it's the match that I think kind of encapsulates what was cool about WCW at the time, and also why WCW wasn't around 5 years later.
most likely, I
because as you mentioned, like they went out of their way for Hogan at times when it didn't make sense for business. Like right. Going back to like the bringing the Warrior in, like nobody wanted to see that.
No, absolutely not. I'm looking at the card.
Yeah.
Would you put like Eddie and DDP last? Which was the final match for the U.S. title, the U.S. heavyweight title tournament. The rest of the card is Ultimate Dragon and Malenko.
Yep. I think that was it. Ray and Jushin Liger have a match.
Ray and Jushin, Akira Hokuto and Medusa, Jarrett and Benoit, Voldemort. The Outsiders against Faces of Fear, Eddie and DDP, Luger and the Giant, and then Piper and Hogan.
Mm.
What do you think, Steve?
My thought would be to watch the whole pay-per-view backwards, since we can do whatever we want. And I think that would be a pretty good card.
Piper and Hogan, Hurt and Jerk, and
Dragon Malenko main event, Akira Hokuto, Medusa, kind of a calm down match, you know, Liger, Mysterio before. Yeah, I think just watch it in reverse. I don't think there's really anything you could do but run that main event, not just from the perspective of Hogan's never going to do second to last, but it has to, you know, just the two people who are in it. I didn't remember this match at all. And I watched all the stuff at this time, and probably this was the first time I watched since then. Piper, the best part of this match, I think this was the promo that Piper did earlier in the show. Cause mm-hmm. the nice thing about the network is that you can, you know, click on the matches one by one. And so I went and saw that there was a promo, and that was pretty fun because, you know, it's just Piper spitballing with Mean Gene. And I thought he said, you know, not knowing the background of what got to this match, not remembering at least. And turns out it just really started at around Halloween Havoc time. Not knowing that, having just that brief couple minutes to fill you in on why this was happening, it put the story together nicely. And like, oh, okay, I know why this is happening. I was confused as to why the title was on the line until Piper won. And then I realized why the title was not on the line. Can we talk about the fan charging the ring? I enjoyed that.
Yes, absolutely. Oh yeah.
And the poor giant has to hold Piper up in the choke slam for like an hour and a half while Hogan and the referee and security dispatched the guy. It was Hogan who kicked the fan. That's kind of fun. And then as they go off the air, like, you know, blaming the giant for the loss, your typical kind of Hogan heel stuff of this at this time period.
Yeah.
It was fine to watch. I looked this match up as we were talking. Meltzer gave it a star and a half, which was actually a high. You know, I was looking at this website, Pro Fight Database. And in terms of the matches that got, you know, Piper didn't do many matches these last few years.
Right.
Considering that he had a dud, a zero star against Savage, a dud with Hart and Hogan versus Savage and Piper, baseball pad, star and a half, dud. The only really good match he had was the match with Flair at Bash on the Beach 97.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But besides that, I mean, this is actually pretty high up for him.
Yeah, it is.
I like Piper quite a bit. But yeah.
Yeah, well, like Roddy's great, but I think, and this is kind of tying it back to AEW, Scotty. I think the difference is Cody and those guys probably learned from history, or at least I hope they've learned from history. Like, there's a place for legends. Like, Sting coming back is a big deal and should be treated as such, but Sting shouldn't be fighting Kenny Omega next. Like, that shouldn't be the move. Like, I think there's a right way and a wrong way to kind of apply the legends, and I think Hogan exacerbates things just because Hogan's always going to be Hogan. But I do think, like, out of all of the Roddy matches, the Flair one worked the best, and that's maybe besides the fact Flair could actually work. But I think, like, Flair and Hogan just, you know, they have big egos, both of them, but there's a different way that they engage with those egos.
Right. And also, this had to be kind of a quick feud because as we get into 1997, speaking of your boy Sting, they had to get that thing into high gear.
Yeah.
So they
and
needed to
Sting
kind of
was out. Sting was out in this match for like what, a minute, 2 minutes for some reason that they never paid off.
I know, right? Very weird.
Like he comes out, looks at the match, like, oh, I guess this is the main event. Okay, I'll watch it in the back.
I know. Very strange. by the way, the women. The just on a side note, the women's tournament. The wrestlers were, it was Medusa, mm-hmm. Rena Jabuki, who was, what's her real name? Is that somebody else? Oh, that's Hisako Sasaki. Oh, it's Akira Hokuto. Okay. Mm-hmm. Zero. Wait a minute. Did she wrestle twice? Rena Jabuki.
No, those two different people.
No, it's actually not. According to, then this link is wrong. Okay, Zero against Malia Hosaka.
The link is the Come on, get it together, Wikipedia.
I know. I just clicked Rena Jabuki, and it's Akira. It goes to Akira Hokuto. It's like, what the fuck? And they want me to give me two. They want me to give them $2.75.
I want to say, like, maybe it's the kind of thing where she wasn't big enough to warrant her own entry, but she played a part in Hokuto's career, so it links back.
Kaoru against Sunoko Kato, and then Akira Hokuto against Miko Satomura, and of course Hokuto eventually won the tournament. The U.S. title tournament was Eddie Guerrero, Conan, Benoit, Regal, Luger, Arn, Jarrett, and DDP, and of course Eddie would go on to win that tournament.
It's a hell of a field.
Yeah, not bad. So they had to get that. So I could see they had to get the Hogan Piper feud out of the way. Because your boy Sting needed to get that. We need to kick that thing into high gear. So anyway, I thought I'd pick this match. It'd be kind of fun. And, you know, see kind of a different Piper Hogan spin from what we saw in the 80s. And a very different Piper situation from 13 years earlier from the great match. I think a lot of people probably put the dog collar match on their list. This one, probably not so much. But I thought it would be a fun match to watch.
No, sure.
So anyway, all right, well... Brother Nate, I will now hand you the shoe. And the final GWCW match pick segment of the ever, as our next episode will be the final episode of the year, Brother Nate will give you two final matches. Because by the time that show airs, you will have, be the 18th. So you have like 12 days before you put your ballot in. So Brother Nate will give you one or two delicious gems to see if you would like to put on your ballot. So look forward to that in 2 weeks. Speaking of 2 weeks, that'll be our next episode. Guys, great show as always. Always fantastic. Thank you all for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks. We will recap. Interesting. Speaking of AEW Impact, boys, next Saturday, the 12th, is that title of that show that I won't tell because Steve hates it. Insert better name here, 2020. Your boy Chris Bay, Nate, getting a title shot. With Rich Swann, and then there's also a match involving the tag title guys. All right, question then. Do we see Kenny or some AEW action on that show?
No one will know because they can't log into Impact.
Exactly! Fucking jerks!
Yeah.
No one's going to watch anyway because your login's garbage. Yeah, thank you, Steve. I always knew you were on my corner. So anyway, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the backlash of that, no pun intended. And we will preview TLC, the final WWE/NXT pay-per-view special of 2020, the piece of shit year that this was. So, and a bunch of other stuff. Nate, hopefully, Steve, you get some New Japan Point updates. Maybe Meltzer won't be sleeping at the wheel. We'll see if I've calmed down and see what NWA stuff happens and everything else and a lot of fun and games. On the final main event of 2020, coming up next, episode 163. So, for Brother Steve, Brother Nate, I am Brother Scott. You have been in the main event. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate Milton.
You know, all this talk about Sting, it's got me thinking, Steve.
Yeah?
And you can hear the rest of my joke next Tuesday on the Jenny position. How many lonely sleepless nights? How many lies? How many fights? And why would you wanna put yourself through all of that again? Love is pain, I hear you say. Love is a cruel and bitter way of paying you back for all the faith you ever had in your brain. Or could it be that what you need the most can leave you feeling just like a ghost? You never wanna feel so sad and lost again. One day you could be looking through an old book in rainy weather. You see a picture of us smiling at you when you were still together. You could be walking down the street and who should you chance to meet but that same old smile you've been thinking of all day. I don't return the clock to see you. Oh honey, I'll sell the stock, we'll spend all the money, we're starting up a brand new day. Turn the
Crosby. Stop.